Hi everyone, and most welcome to the FiberPod. This is our very first episode, and we are thrilled to get started and to continue to launch podcast episodes with voices from our industry. We will have many different subjects to discuss, such as market trends and technical trends. It will also be deep dives in areas like investments, sea cables, build out in certain countries, market drivers, and much more. All episodes will include myself together with a special invited guest. In this first episode, I have the honor to meet Vincent Garnier, the Director General for the Fiber to the Home Council Europe, a role he has kept since July 2020. Vincent brings to his position 25 years of experience in the telecommunications industry, in marketing and business development in EMEA and Asia for business-to-business companies. Most recently, he was Marketing Director responsible for defining the market strategies for the broadband solutions at CommScope. Prior to joining CommScope, Mr. Garnier worked in international business development at TKH Group and as a marketing manager at Prysmian Group and Exide Technologies. Vincent has been actively involved in the FTTH Council Europe activities for several years. He became a member of the board of directors and treasurer in 2019. I hope you will enjoy this first episode, in which Vincent and I have interesting talks and where Vincent is telling about what FTTH Council is doing for the industry, as well as some trends over Europe. So, very, very warm welcome, Vincent.
Thank you, Magnus. Very happy to be here and thanks for having me on this podcast.
Thank you. And then I actually happens to know that you are also an active rock and alpine climber and you also play a few instruments. But we will come back to that afterwards. I think it sounds extremely dangerous, but also, of course, interesting to hear more about this climbing. You will have to tell me that later.
Absolutely.
Good. So, you are now the Director General of a really well-known and well-recognized organization called the FTTH Council Europe. Can you tell a bit about the background of the council? I mean, when it started, the council's role in the FTTH build-out around Europe and so on.
Yes, absolutely. Actually, to go back to the inception of the FTTH Council, you need to look at 2004. And 2004 was when five companies, at that time manufacturers of components of the FTTH chain, decided to create the council with the aim to promote the usage of fiber as the best, more future-proof broadband technology. And at that time, the objective from the beginning was not to have an organization focusing on the defense of a category of manufacturers or category of company. It was really to promote that idea for the benefits of the society, of the citizen and businesses of Europe.
By that, 2004, I can imagine then FTTH wasn't really well developed in many countries. Do you remember any, particular important projects or other things that the FTTH Council did to actually have an impact of the decisions to go towards full fiber?
Well, the council started relatively small, started through education to a very large extent. And you're right by saying that in 2004, fiber was really not the main technology used by internet service provider. That was really the very beginning of the development of internet, by the way. Things were much more advanced in some Asian country. So a lot of the work has been on education as we moved forward. But also the council moved from that core group of manufacturers to a much larger organization, which now has up to 150 members. And these members are not only vendors, but they are also operators. They are also investors. So from a vendor organization, we turn into a organization which regroups the entire ecosystem which manage the FTTH deployment. And that is really quite an achievement to have expanded the scope of the activity, which strengthen its relevance and the way it can be heard by policymakers.
And I, as I mentioned in the introduction of you, Vincent, you and I have had a few years together in the board of the FTTH, and I also must say that it has been a change with widening the member base in different areas. But as you said, I think it's really, really good. And also I can assume that it's very positive for the council. And then you also have one of the biggest, one of the most well-known conferences, an annual event in different cities every year. Can you tell a little bit more about the FTTH conference?
Yes, the FTTH conference is an annual event. It's been traditionally organized around the February, March, April timeframe for quite a while now. And this is really the place where all decision makers gather to discuss everything from technology, policy, including financing of FTTH deployment in Europe. It's to some extent the largest full fiber forum and summit in the world. The last time we could have it physically was in Amsterdam. We had close to 3,500 delegates. We've had, of course, during COVID to turn the experience for all participants into the online world. We think we delivered good value, but of course, there are limitations to what can be achieved in a fully digital environment. We are very happy to prepare for the Vienna conference, which takes place at the end of March next year. And that will be the opportunity to see all these very dynamic members of the fiber community back face to face. We very much look forward to it.
Yeah, I agree. And this conference, I must underline that I think it's one of the absolute best. And also, it's always a lot of good speakers to listen to and really good presentations on both on like from the investor angle, technologies, and I think it's really, really good. And then also you have this the venue part for exhibitors to buy themselves or to show their products in the stand. But I mean, from the beginning, if I remember correct, normally you have this conference in different cities every year, and from the beginning it was a special reason for locating in a special city, wasn't it?
I think the objective was to be able to focus on some countries and give the possibility why we change location one year from another one to better touch a different region of Europe. So we've been in Warsaw, we've been in Amsterdam, we went to Spain, we went to France, we went to Luxembourg. It's really the interest to give the focus to the different region. We are a truly pan-European organization. When you look at other, I would say, broadband-related conferences that tend to stay at the same location, which has big advantages, but the consequence is that they are having an over-representation of delegates coming from neighboring regions and countries. Whereas the FTTH conference has really developed into a genuine pan-European organization where every country is relatively represented in proportion of its market size. So that gives a unique chance to all stakeholders to have a very good comprehensive view of the situation of FTTH market and policies across the continent.
I also remember when you had this normally also located due to that some countries made quite an effort in like building out the FTTH networks, and then the conference was some kind of recognition for that as well.
Yeah, it's a recognition. It could also be, I would say, a way to encourage those countries which are a bit behind. So there are different ways of looking at it, but indeed, it's taken seriously by policymakers of the hosting countries.
That was some history about the council, what the council is doing, and also about the conference. So one really important thing that I think the council is doing is the publications. We're I normally, and also a lot of other people I know, normally refers to the report that you publish. It's the panorama, it's the forecast, and you also did this forecast and ruler FTT report. And I must say for the listeners that this episode is recorded on the 1st of October. So if anything happens from then until when this is released, then that is the reason why we might don't mention that here. But I mean, from this angle then, when we are in the 1st of October, for a couple of weeks ago, you released or published this forecast and rural FTTH report, which I found really, really interesting. Could you please, Vincent, tell me a bit about your key findings from the forecast?
Okay. What we measure essentially are two parameters. The first one is what we call home pass coverage. So how many percentage of available homes have actually potentially access to fiber? How many can potentially be connected? So that is home passed. We also measuring the percentage of penetration of subscriber, which is among all internet service internet user, how many of them are receiving internet thanks to full fiber network. So those are the two key percentages we are following. So far in Europe, we can say that we've done half of the job. Approximately 50%, a bit more than 50% of the household can have access to full fiber network. But only half of that are actually subscribing to a full fiber based internet connection. So the take up rate is approximately 50%. Now, our forecast, and that has been, you know, gradually progressing since the last maybe 20, 15 years. What we are forecasting is a very clear acceleration of that trend. We believe that from approximately 50% as we speak, we are going to reach by the end of 26, 75% coverage for fiber. We will actually multiply, I mean, we will have a plus 50% in the coverage thanks to what's going to be built in the next 5 years. And we expect also the percentage of subscribers to jump. We expect subscribers to be multiplied by two between now and 26 in Europe. So it might be an impact of the pandemic. In many cases, and for many element describing the evolution of our societies and economy, people say that the COVID-19 crisis has acted as an accelerator. And this is very clear for what concerns FTTH development plans and take-up rate from subscribers. We see clearly an acceleration of the trend.
One, if I just have a follow-up question on the pandemic as a driver for building out the networks, do you think it's both through that, I mean, when you're working from home, of course, it requires high-speed connections and reliable connections. But could it also be so that, I mean, there is a lot of money to be invested and that fiber optic network seems to be one of the most attractive assets to invest in right now? Do you think that both these could be drivers? Or
I think it's an acceleration. So you shouldn't think in a term of a total, it's not a total shift in paradigm. It's an acceleration of a process which started earlier, but clearly fiber connection and very, very high broadband network moved from the position of being a good to have to the position of being a must to become a utility. And one of the key benefits, if we can speak that way, of the pandemic has been that everyone, including policymaker, realized that offering access to broadband, specifically a full fiber network to the entire population, is not a luxury. It's a necessity. And therefore, they have channeled a lot of the infrastructure investment towards the development of the FTTH network. And I think operators have also perceived from their market, from their end user, that end user are now much more interested in subscribing to fiber. they also are probably more ready than before to pay a premium to get a better service, which has encouraged investment. Now, investors in fiber network had already identified FTTH infrastructure as a very interesting long-term investment. But the pandemic has only strengthened that interest in FTTH market as a very interesting long-term position, a long-term investment for infrastructure fund looking for investment with a time span of 25, 30 years.
Yeah, and I also must ask you something about when we saw this. It seems like, I mean, you mentioned that the council was founded in 2004, and I think that the FTTH in Sweden started to be built already back in 96. And then when you see these huge numbers that we can foresee that we will be built as written in or forecasted in your forecast, I mean, it seems like that it has never been built so much in the coming 5 years, if you look backwards. What do you think about that? Is it also like that we have come to situation where some of the developed countries are so far behind, so now they really have to speed up in their build-up?
Yeah, I think the main reason which is behind this expected surge, unprecedented growth of FTTH deployment, is linked to the fact that it's going to be driven by very large countries where incumbent operators used to, well, to go very slowly or drag their feet and have now definitely embraced FTTH and are ready to invest. Of course, it's supported by the government. It's supported by the context we've just described before. So if you look at the 50% which still need to be connected or connectable by fiber in Western Europe, in the European Union plus UK, as we measure it, 60% of that potential comes from three countries: Germany, UK, Italy. Hmm. So if you add maybe Poland, the Benelux, and the remaining of the French deployment, which is already very much under the right track, you get to 90% of the potential market in European Union for the years to come. So clearly, Germany, UK, Italy are going to be the three countries where, if you look at the overall number, Europe will succeed or fail to reach its objective in terms of FTTH deployment.
Yeah, I shall admit that I always read these reports, the panorama and the forecast, with great interest, and I really appreciate them. And it will be really interesting to see if it's possible to build all this, but hopefully it will, even if it might be some challenges with these very, very high numbers that we see. But I think that we have to move on, even if I could spend a whole episode just talking about the forecast and the panorama. One other publication I remember was the one about the 5G and the FTTH converged networks. I mean, in some, or quite often, you get the question if you think that 5G will challenge out FTTH or replace FTTH. But in this report, it was quite well written. And I think the most of us will understand that they are very connected or linked together. Can you please tell some about this report that I mentioned?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the starting point for our audience is to understand that the technical parameters of 5G using frequency which are much higher than the one used in 3G and 4G require that mobile antenna. They need to be fed with very high broadband, what we call backhaul. So you need to transport data to the antenna before it goes on air. And today, the only technology which is able to bring enough quantity of information to those antenna fast enough and with enough latency or reduced latency is fiber. So when mobile operators are developing 5G and will in the future increase the density of antenna, they will need to connect every single 5G antenna with a fiber connection and multiple fiber cores for each antenna. So from that perspective, 5G is fiber best friend, because the more 5G antenna, the more fiber is required to connect those antennas.
And also I remember from that report that it was, if you build an FTTH network and then you overbuild a bit, then it will cost almost nothing to then build out the 5G.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you project yourself to a world where 5G is very well developed, you will end up having an antenna every few hundred meters. So as a consequence, the network to connect all of these antenna is very, very similar to the network which needs to be developed to connect every homes and businesses. And our analysis is showing that even if you don't know precisely what your 5G network will look like, but anticipating on some assumption regarding the location of your future 5G antenna, should enable you to build the FTTH network anticipating the future 5G. And as you said, when comes the time to connect your 5G antenna, you will do that in terms of fiber backhaul for hardly no additional cost. And our view and what we are saying to converge operators is that while you deploy FTTH, while you're designing your FTTH network, please think and anticipate about the future development of 5G. If you do so, you will save a lot of money and time.
Yeah. And it can make a quite big improvement of the business case also. If you plan to build an FTTH network, but you also plan for 5G, and then you can have an additional income when the 5G rolls out. So,
That's right. That's right.
You can talk about all these reports for a long time, but I think they're very interesting. I think really encourage everyone to look out for them and read them. But we also had this one with the business models, which I think is also very interesting. Can you please tell about like the bigger important topics or outcomes from that report?
Sure. Every single report comes from a committee. So I don't want to get too technical in the way the FTTH Council is organized, but it's coming from our members. Mm-hmm. So this is an initiative. It is driven and really shared with the wider community, but it comes from members being actively working on this report. In the case of fiber business model, it comes from our investor committee. And our objective is to help all FTTH entrepreneurs, operators interested in their business strategy. We wanted to analyze 8 out of dozens of business model used successfully by operators across Europe, analyze what was driving their success, what were their key characteristics, so we can compare them, we can put them in their respective context, and give some visibility to those who are interested in evolving their model or building new company or having spin-off, having merger or investing. It's interesting to know what works, what doesn't work, and what are the key parameters which have been used. So we have scanned and we have explained the situation of 8 privately funded FTTH operators in Europe.
I think it was 70 pages report or something like that, if I remember correct.
Yeah, we had to keep it very, very short.
Okay. I really must say, if you're an investor, operator, network owner, or something similar to that, I can really encourage you to read this report. It's really, really well written and really, really interesting, I think. Then you have also made this handbook for the rollout, and you also made a very interesting report about the copper switch-off. But I will mention some about these two as well before we move on.
Yeah, I mean, maybe especially the handbook. I mean, the handbook has been around. I was mentioning at the beginning of our conversation the educational role of the FTTH Council. The handbook is really where all manufacturers, but also, and that is very new, operators are bringing together their knowledge. So it's brand agnostic, it's cross-checked by multiple players on the market, and it aims at giving the latest state-of-the-art information about how to design, how to build, how to maintain an FTTH network. It's a Bible for everyone interested in the technical side and operational side of an FTTH infrastructure. A bit more than 70 pages. It's actually reached this time with 324.
Yeah, and that is also, as you said, it's a true Bible. And I think it's a fantastic job that they have made in that committee, of course. Now we have ended up in the part which we called the Swedish fika. I think that everyone knows what Swedish fika is. You grab a cup of coffee, you have some cookie or a bun, and I think that you have got a kit on your side, Vincent.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I've got. It's called actually the Swedish fika. So there is a Swedish chocolate ball, and there are something called. Which a name I must say you probably have to explain to me what it means because it's called the Swedish vacuum cleaner.
Yes.
So I will need some context to really understand what I'm going to swallow.
Maybe you don't like the taste either. You know, it's quite a crazy name, but it actually is the vacuum cleaner. I don't know why it calls like that, but you will have to taste it. Now we are supposed to be a bit more private. Now we are having a break. We are having a coffee. We are eating a vacuum cleaner or a chocolate ball or anything else. And then I'm so curious, Vincent, to hear about your climbing. Can you please tell us a bit about that? It sounds extremely dangerous.
It is really frightening. I mean, it's not as dangerous as speaking to a microphone, you know, with no training, but it requires practice. And joke aside, I started doing that when I was 10, so I have now some experience, and I've been doing that forever, as much as I could.
Wow. But is it unprotected or how does it work? Is it
This is relatively protected, so you use rope.
Yeah.
If you do that in a relatively, I would say, prepared, even outdoor crag, you have protection bolts which have been installed on the rock.
Yeah.
And these bolts are preventing you from falling from too high. So you can still take, you know, 5 to 10 to 15 meters hold. Falls,
yeah.
But the rope is, and if your your climbing partner pays attention to what you do, it should normally hold you and prevent you from reaching the ground too fast.
Wow, I've been to a few ski resorts and I have seen some climbers there with the helmets and do you call it axes and all this?
That would be on ice. Yeah.
Ah, okay. Are you doing that?
Well, I'm. So that's something I do a bit less frequently because there's not much ice in Belgium anymore due to global warming. Okay. But there's quite a few rocks, and you can go out and enjoy rock climbing. I'm also climbing in indoor gyms where you have that. In that case, this is on resin and artificial structure, but nevertheless can be quite tiring and impressive, up to 20 meters high.
Yeah.
And 20 meters is high enough, you know, to give you some exciting things to do.
Yeah. What is like the biggest or your biggest driver for doing this on your free time?
That's an interesting question. I guess there is an element of adventure.
Mm-hmm.
There is that feeling that you do something which is not too common, or especially when I was doing that at the very beginning. So we're talking about, you know, 40 years ago. It was not as popular as it is today. You couldn't really have that in media. So you stand alone a little bit doing an activity which is perceived as a bit mysterious, a bit dangerous.
Yeah.
If you do it properly, you're safe, but there is an element of uniqueness, especially if you're not only doing rock climbing, but reaching the top of the mountain. That's another dimension where you're on your own, you're above everybody else. Mm. So maybe a little bit that sentiment to be able to, you know, to see the world from above. Yeah. That is something which is quite unique.
And maybe also you have to be 100% focused. You can't just look at emails or think about work or so at the same time. Or
no, you're right. It really requires a lot of attention. Or if you don't have that attention, you usually don't. You're not allowed to practice too long. You nature and Newton and its gravity law. Brings you back to reality very fast.
Wow. I think it looks or sounds really cool, and I can understand that you really enjoy it and it's something to do on your free time who really separates you from work and have to focus. So now, thank you, Vincent. Now we have to go back to work again. The council has a few very important initiatives as well, which I think is very important for our industry. And one, or it's all of them are, of course, especially important. But one that I know that you have done for a while now is the Women in Fiber. You are working to get more women into the fiber industry. Can you say something about that?
Yes, absolutely. You know, the core mission of the council is, of course, to promote the deployment of fiber. But having gathered 150 companies, we also realized that we become a platform where they can exchange best practices, where they can help each other progressing in their approach of business. And we think that promoting gender equality is something which is increasingly important for our different organization. And that the council is a good place for companies which are part of the same ecosystem to exchange best practices and maybe create some drive to help each other, you know, accelerating the evolution of our respective organization and go in the right direction. Mm-hmm. So we relaunched the activity which had been a little bit sleepy during the past few years. It started a few years back, but for a variety of reasons, was a little bit forgotten recently. And we found an incredibly motivated group of persons, female and male, very much interested in sharing the experience of their different organization. And it's only a few months back, but we have launched yesterday, I think, a survey. We will report on that survey during the next conference in Vienna. And from there, I'm really convinced we will have a lot of very interesting initiatives.
I'm glad to hear that. I also think that's very, very important for the industry to get a bit more modern. And so I think it's very important what you're doing there. And do you have a committee, especially for women in fiber?
Yeah, since it's a very beginning, we call it, in our jargon, working group. Because it needs a little bit of stabilization before it gets the status of committee. But that's the same principle. Yeah. We have a group of members gathering to build content and develop activity together. Absolutely.
Very good. And then we have another very important subject, which is sustainability. I mean, it's a super important task, and I know that almost every company is working with this today. And even if the digitalization itself in many ways brings, or can help the society to be more sustainable. Can you give a few examples of how you have worked with this within the council?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, maybe first of all, the context. This is one of these areas where the pandemic has really moved the needle. We now see an acceleration in terms of organization policy in favor of their adaptation towards carbon neutrality. And it's no longer greenwashing. Increasingly, people are getting, and organizations are getting really serious about implementing changes to move their organization in the right direction. Hmm. At the council, we want to be again, a bit like Women in Fiber, a platform where all different members can share experiences. As a technology, fiber is the most carbon neutral broadband technology. So it's a passive infrastructure as opposed to copper or HFC network. It uses far less power to run. It's very robust. It has very low maintenance, and therefore the cost and carbon footprint associated with maintenance is much lower for fiber compared to alternative technology.
Yeah.
And on top of that, it contributes to enabling multiple applications which are becoming essential for the society to adapt to the consequences of climate change. I mean, the most obvious has been overused and commented during the pandemic. This is the ability to work remotely, to learn remotely, and not having to travel, not having to spend, to have the footprint, carbon footprint that transportation brings. But there are many others. And so fiber in itself is the best technology in terms of carbon footprint among alternative broadband solution, but also it becomes the enabler of multiple application, which will be essential. Mm. And at the council, we want to be a place where different experiences are shared, and also the ecosystem. You know, installing fiber, maintenance of fiber, and the way organizations are run, and also the production of the different component which gets into the end-to-end fiber network. Every company is trying its very best to be carbon neutral, and we share experience. This is really a place where there is no competitive discussion. Everyone benefits from the experience of the other, and we will try and report on the progresses of the entire ecosystem, operators as well as vendors, and investors are also looking at how they can invest in greener projects. Hmm. So everyone is really concerned by this topic.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for. I agree with everything you say. I also remember you told about that it's more energy efficient with fiber optic networks than the traditional ones. And I remember when we looked into the report about copper switch off. That one driver one reason for one operator in Europe to switch off the old copper networks and replace them with fiber optic networks was that they should save, like, do you remember how many percentage of power consumption?
Well, percentage are always difficult, but it's in the region of 40-60%. It's very significant.
Yeah. So, I mean, of course, fiber networks will both have a direct and indirect positive impact on the sustainability.
Absolutely.
And then you have, I think this is really one important one, is that, I mean, it started with the backbones and the national wide networks, and then you have the FTTH. And then we are like in the in-home broadband area. And you also have a committee for that. Can you explain something about it?
Yeah, the committee has a long and very specific name. It's called In-Home Broadband Excellence Committee.
Yep.
But basically, you know, the rationale is the fact that if you bring fiber to the doorstep, you've just done one part of the job. Mm-hmm. What is important is not that people have fiber at the doorstep, but that they benefit fully from the experience of fiber. And to do so, that bandwidth needs to be made available at the level of the devices that people are using. So should it be the smart TV, should it be your iPhone, your iPad, or whatever tablet you have? And increasingly, the last meters of that connection are not going to be using fiber. So far, there is no fiber socket on your smartphone. So we want to discuss and promote all the technical context around the edge of what happens at the edge of the network. It's very important that people understand that the job is not finished when fiber has reached the doorstep, but then how the end user is going to experience fiber is extremely important. That drives the capacity of the subscriber to validate the benefits of fiber, to renew subscription, maybe to increase the level of speed that they would like to have. This is connected to the type of services which goes on fiber, but also to the connectivity. There are multiple services around how to maximize the optimization of the Wi-Fi network, which is essentially what you use at the end of your fiber, full fiber line. So all things are connected, and we think at the FTTH Council that our role shouldn't be limited to the fiber link. It should go beyond to make sure that the fiber infrastructure is totally used, that its benefits are maximized, fully understood and fully accepted by end users.
Really, I think that this is really important, because I also remember when we had this discussion about fake fiber advertising. It's a bit on the same topic, even if this is more important, because this is the true experience, that if you don't really can use the fiber, then probably if many people don't really benefit, I mean, the strength with the fiber, then it can slow down the build out and the demand from the market. So I remember also when we had this discussion about this fake fiber advertising, where some players in the market marketed as full fiber solutions, but it wasn't really full fiber. It was like fiber only a bit of the way, so to say.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there is fiber in many networks which are not full fiber networks. So the some smart advertiser were playing on the ambiguity that there was fiber in their network, whereas it was not full fiber. Our point is really to look at things from the angle of the end user. You know, if you're an end user, you don't think about the complexity of the network from your doorstep to the central office and beyond. What you see is, can I see my movie? Can I upload my photo? Am I having a good experience on whatever device I'm using? And you don't think further. And typically, if there is a problem, you blame your internet service provider, even though it might be caused by multiple factors. So it's very important that internet service provider, communication service provider, understand all that complexity. And we have in in the council, we have all of the expertise required to provide this type of information. We are working on a handbook dedicated to all this problematic at the edge of the network. So what has been done for the handbook to roll out fiber will be also produced at the level of the last meters of connection with the end device to inform, educate all stakeholders about the importance and about of that topic and about what are the way to mitigate any difficulty that they might face.
Now we will actually go into the final part of this episode, and I wanted to talk to you a bit about some important and general trends or activities regarding the FTTH build-out in Europe. I mean, we talked in the beginning of the huge build-out that we can, forecast for the coming years. And we know that these high-dense areas will, of course, be the most attractive ones. What do you think about the challenge with the rural networks? How do you think that we can make sure that they will be built, or what kind of models can you predict?
A couple of things. First of all, you were mentioning earlier, and we didn't touch on it, that we have indeed released a report which focuses on the situation of rural networks in some key countries. Overall, what we see is that the deployment of fiber in rural area or low density area is progressing. It's progressing more or less parallel to the general progression of FTTH, but the coverage remains much lower than the average coverage of the country. Overall, if in Europe we have 50% coverage of FTTH, in less dense area, that coverage is much lower and is on average lower than 25%. So it's half of what it is in the rest of the country. Mm. So that's the first point. The digital divide, which is often highlighted for mobile network coverage, also exists for fixed line. In terms of fiber deployment, it is very well reflected in this number. You have, you know, half less FTTH coverage in rural area compared to the rest of the country. Mm. Now, the situation in rural area in many cases requires public funding because there is not necessarily commercial business case for operators, but not always. So it's really about looking at the details, because depending on the of the configuration, depending on the profile of operators, there are possibilities to deploy, to build and develop rollout projects privately funded, which can effectively cover rural area. We see more and more operator being able to set up business model with very lean organization, with very smart business model, and these are described in our business model guide. Yeah. They can approach rollout in rural area in an effective way. There's still room and need for private financing, but our view at the council is that the balance should be carefully studied and it can evolve as time progress. And so we don't disturb a free and fair competition situation, and we only invest when there is no alternative and when private money is required to bring fiber to these regions, because it's very important to give a very high capacity network to every single village and make sure that the entire population is properly connected. It will be central to their capacity to develop any business, any economy in the future.
Thank you for a very good answer. And I also, of course, think that it could be quite of a difference in what you actually mean with rural. If you look at the really rural part in Sweden and Finland, for example, and if you compare it to rural areas in central.
I'm pretty sure rural in Finland is not necessarily rural in the Netherlands, for example.
I agree. But I think that you explained it very well. And if you do it in the right way, then you can also be an attractive investment to build in rural networks.
Yeah, the benefits of rural is that you can expect a very high take-up.
Exactly.
So if you do things right, I mean, if you have villages is a good case because it's a long distance to reach the village. But once you're in the village, the road work, civil work to reach every house in a dense village is okay. Mm. The big difficulty is really scattered households, and that is where you would struggle.
Yeah, and when it comes to that, I mean, one important part of building all networks, but maybe especially the rural ones, is probably the kind of like investments needed. Do you see any certain trends when it comes to private investments into the FTTH networks?
Well, we have seen a surge of private investment, and I'm talking generally speaking for all of Europe.
Yeah,
it's not necessarily very well spread between the different region. But the example of the UK or Germany shows that there is money. There's a lot of money to be invested. There are many infrastructure funds and private investors ready to invest into FTTH project. They see it as a very interesting way to have a safe long-term investment. And that has clearly been one of the drivers of the acceleration we've noticed during the last 2-3 years, and it's certainly a reason to hope that that trend will continue, because we see more and more investment funds seeing FTTH as the place to invest for their long-term investments.
Yeah, I really agree, and I should maybe have the same view of it if I had a fund and should invest for a long term, that probably the one of the best investments should be to own like the communication or infrastructure of the future. I mean, the last one, since the time is about to run out, but I think an interesting question could be that, again, then back to the forecast, everything that probably will be built during the coming years, do you think that it will require any adjustments of the regulatory frameworks in these countries that you mentioned?
The regulatory framework, I cannot talk about specific countries because that would, I don't have the detail in every country and I don't think we have time to get that level of detail. But no. At European level, the regulatory framework and public policy is much more favorable than it has ever been. Mm. We have the European Electronic Communication Code being implemented. That code is defining what is called very high capacity network, and very high capacity network nearly equals to full fiber network. If you read well that definition, there is a digital compass which brings the objective of gigabit for all citizens by 2030, and most of the regulatory framework not only define objective in this document, but also look at what's the best way to implement fiber. So, for example, there is currently the revision of the Broadband Cost Reduction Directive, which aims at really helping reducing all hurdles for a fast and cost-effective deployment of fiber. Mm. And you could have, for example, indicative paper at EU level called like the one called Connectivity Toolbox Recommendation. And that one is more a series of best practices which are made available to all member states, and member states are supposed to cherry-pick the one they want to implement in their respective countries. A lot is done. We, at the Council, we pay attention to the details to make sure that nothing, you know, becomes counterproductive. But overall, we are very happy with the way that framework has evolved. And we see increasingly that FTTH players in different countries are quite happy with the way their local regulator is adapting these EU recommendations in the different countries. The environment is helping.
Now we have actually come to the end of this episode, and I must really thank you. It was a really interesting discussion we had. I have got so much, all your knowledge and experience, Vincent, has been really, really interesting to listen to. And so thank you very much for this.
Well, my pleasure. Thanks for having me, Magnus. And thanks to Exatronic for organizing this series. A very active member of the Council for quite a while. So thank you also to our audience. Hope to see you in a few months or weeks in Vienna for the FTTH Conference 22.
Thank you.